It's time at TalkZone for more world-changing leadership with Our Global Hope. Here again, your host, Dr. Henrik Mann.
If you're just joining us, I'm Dr. Henrik Mann, and we're back with our half-year Our Global Hope celebration of shows discussing the principles of higher standard leadership. I want to remind our listeners that they can learn more about our show by looking us up on the World Wide Web at www.ourglobalhope.com. Or they can email me at hman@gencomintl.com. Our listener call-in line is 1-888-463-6748. Charlie, where do we go from here for this third segment of our conversation?
Well, Henrik, it is so fun to hear you explain the guiding principles of your leadership as well as for us to kind of distill this first half year. You know, we have had people from around the world, people from the worlds of business, economics, people from the world of charity. It's been exciting. And to discover the common principles, we ended our last segment with you sharing a little bit about it's far better to share what bread you have than to steal the bread of another. I wanted to share a little story and then ask you a question. But when I was a pastor of a parish up in the Northwest, I had a group of survivalists, you know, very strong, very reactionary individuals, and they were talking about the end of the world, about bomb shelters. This wasn't just theoretical. These folks were serious about this. And anyway, so one day I asked them, I said, well, if a hungry family comes to your front door, are you going to point your gun or are you going to share your bread? And I want to report the good news is they suddenly realized they couldn't claim to be people of principle without sharing their bread. And we were able to see a complete change of heart and mind, not necessarily a change of every opinion on every issue, but a complete change of heart and mind toward people. And one friend recently said to me, the more bread I share, the more I can believe that the bread can be multiplied. And I think there's a principle here of generosity and abundance. Not an exploitation of our world, but of real generosity and abundance. And with that kind of generosity in mind, one of your guiding principles, Henrik, and it's a guiding principle of our show and of our lives and of our guests, is that there is a way to non-violently both oppose evil and promote the good. And when people hear non-violence or they hear peacemaking, they often think it's passive. They often think we're going to somehow capitulate to terrorism or capitulate to totalitarianism. Could you share a little bit of your developing principles of nonviolent engagement with the world? I think that's going to really help us as we try to integrate business, political, and civic concern.
Well, let me begin by saying that some leaders or some individuals draw a circle around themselves, and they're only interested in their own welfare. Others draw a circle around themselves and their family and seek to just focus on that small group of people. Still others may draw a circle around their particular ethnic or social group and commit to working for their welfare. And then there are some people who draw a circle around the whole world and say that they're committed to making a lasting global change. And this show is about trying to expand the sense of consciousness that people have, that there are opportunities to make a bigger impact and have a greater legacy and a more honorable legacy than one that's focused just on yourself. When it comes to this issue of nonviolence, I don't believe in idealism for idealism's sake. I actually believe in the power of non-cooperation as demonstrated by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in terms of not cooperating with evil structures or with justice, injustice, but rather choosing to marshal the political resources of people of goodwill and good conscience and to speak to the conscience of those who are not promoting justice, and to do so by quite frankly putting up a stop sign and saying that we need to stop and we need to have a conversation about how people are being treated. I don't believe that people should run away from the issues that they confront, when, but that they should stand up and speak out when it's appropriate, and to do so the right way. But to really engage leaders in terms of accountability, that we all have a say, we all have a stake, both leaders and followers, in the kind of world that we're creating. And that when you look at issues of nonviolence in the larger political realm, that it's time for somebody to say that the military solution is not the solution that's ultimately going to resolve the political questions of why people are having a hard time getting along with each other. And if there can be some real open dialogue between people of goodwill, if we can move our politicians aside and at the grassroots level engage in building structures of conversation where human beings are given a chance to share their perspective in a non-judgmental environment, where we can talk about having everybody's needs met, where we can talk about the importance of human dignity, and we can talk about the importance of the welfare of our planet. I think a lot more can be accomplished than those kinds of initiatives that are based in violence, that are based in coercion, that are based in manipulation, that are based in sanctions. I think that there's tremendous opportunity when an orientation and a political movement of nonviolence is truly unleashed. And I don't think that President Obama, when he was talking from the Nobel Peace Prize lecture stand in Oslo, was speaking accurately about the power of the nonviolent movement that has been seen in such luminaries as Mahatma Gandhi. I believe that Gandhi was not somebody who was just an idealist. He was very practical. He challenged the economic structures that were oppressive in his day and in his age. And people stood with him because he was a man of truth. He was a man of conviction. And he was a man who backed up his talk with true compassion and concern for the poor in India. And that changed the nation of India and has changed the world. And I believe that that's still possible today.
Well, I want to affirm that. And we have some very exciting examples of this. Two recent ones in history are in South Africa, as the apartheid regime came down. And, of course, that great nation is still in the process of building an infrastructure that's integrated, but they developed peace and reconciliation commissions where people who had perpetrated acts of violence or evil had to face their accusers, but they also had the opportunity for reconciliation, for forgiveness, in some cases incarceration or some kind of redemptive work was necessary. But in thousands and thousands of cases, it transformed the community when there was genuine humility and genuine forgiveness. In Ireland, we saw the same thing when the guns were finally put down and some solutions were found. And you come to find out later that behind the scenes, thousands and thousands of people had started to talk to each other across either racial or religious lines. And so, Dr. Henrik, I think what you just said is a critical thing. We tend to look at the world problems as overwhelming, but it may begin with walking across the street and talking to that neighbor from a different culture. And it may begin with confronting the very thing we're afraid of.
You know, I think we're in a time that could be accurately labeled a crisis of the age, that we're between different world orders. And I think the 20th century was filled with tremendous conflict, tremendous human evil, and yet also tremendous invention, tremendous creativity, tremendous human dynamic. I was born in Germany, and it wasn't too many years ago when the Berlin Wall came down. And it seems like ever since that Berlin Wall came down, that there have been walls going down everywhere else in the world. And we are now breathlessly catching up to the economic and social and political realities that have come with that change in world order as we have passed from the 20th century into the 21st century. And I really believe that if we can get mid-level and higher-level leaders to talk with each other, that in fact we will be able to generate projects together ultimately that change the direction of where the world is going, and that build hope and build love and build a sense of human dignity, and don't allow a sense of fear and terrorism to rule our days.
Well, I can't agree with you more. And in fact, this globalization that you're describing about has, we worry about its effects when it comes to some multinational corporations and some of the difficult things that come, but we forget the positive, the salutary effects. I have friends in Silicon Valley who are in touch with village leaders in Guatemala, and they are doing business together. And the artisans of Guatemala are getting paid a fair amount for what they produce, and they're, because of our information age, they got a laptop down to our friends in Guatemala, and they're in touch with each other about productivity, about marketing, about a variety of things, and suddenly whole geographies are changed with a little bit of ingenuity and the combination of indigenous ingenuity, and suddenly this global world has positive effects. Microlending is just sweeping the world. And so our listeners, I think we really want to communicate that there are opportunities for philanthropy, there are opportunities for profit, there are opportunities for impact that empower everyone involved, precisely because some of those walls have come down.
Well, I agree, and I think that's what our Global Hope World-Changing Leadership Talk is really all about, bringing walls down, opening up a public space for people.
And really talking about the new possibilities that are there, talking about working across cultural lines and working across social lines that used to keep everybody in competition, but now they can begin to create new partnerships. And as we get ready for our final segment, I think we want to really look, Henrik, at some of the new kinds of partnerships that are possible in the global world we're coming into. And even when I introduced you, I introduced you as someone whose business activity literally spans the globe. And what are some of the countries of folks that are your friends and partners right now?
Well, I've been working in Korea. I've got partners in Hong Kong that are ready to buy projects. I'm working in London. There's just projects all over the world that are looking for financial resources, and I know that there are struggles that people have to get their projects funded. And so that's on the practical realm as in terms of business, how I've been working. But at a level of humanity, I've been building relationship, for example, with the University of Cambridge regarding a new center of research related to human trafficking, and looking how to fund that center, because I think it's important to enhance the dignity of people by building the right kind of work relationships around the world. Hey, Charlie, I think it's time for us to go to our next break, so I want to remind listeners that they can learn more about our show at www.ourglobalhope.com, or you can reach me at hman@gencomintl.com. We'll be right back with more world-changing leadership talk.